With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome into this episode of La Liga Lowdown to our Match Day 14 recap. I'm your host, Umit here, and as always, we're proud to have this episode rebroadcast on Sirius XMFC 157. Now this was really a great weekend of football, 29 goals across La Liga in total, which is fantastic because La Liga and Santander were donating €1,000 to Spanish food banks for every goal scored. Four of them came at the Camp Nou, where Barcelona drew 2-2 with Valencia, and that's where we're going to start. It was a very Uruguayan game, because there was a Uruguayan influence at each of the four goals. First, Antoine Griezmann, who thinks he's Uruguayan, lost Diakabi for Valencia's opener at a corner kick. Then Griezmann won a penalty that Messi equalised from, not from the attempt itself, but with a header after the breakdown. Then, in the second half, two actual Uruguayans scored, as Ronald Araujo struck his first Barca goal and as Maxi Gomez equalised. To discuss it all, let's bring in our resident Valencia fan and Ronald Koeman expert, Paco Pollitt. This, Paco, was a game that either side could have won, but neither team did. Both Barcelona and Valencia probably go home frustrated from this, right?
I really don't want to anger Barca fans and sound biased, but I sincerely believe Valencia had the most chances to win this one. There are a number of chances in the first half which were outrageously easy to turn into goals, but Valencia's lack of finishing quality ruined their chances. It was almost a comedy in the making, just see the way Cheryshev, Yunus Musa, Gaya and Maxi Gomez prevented each other from properly slotting in their finish around the 25-minute mark. Barca's first frustration might come from the fact that they actually did the most difficult thing, turning around the game thanks to a Messi goal and an incredible Araujo volley. But their defense is just horrendous, and we saw it in the flesh in just the way Mingueza foolishly allowed Maxi Gomez to sneak ahead and slot in the cross by José Luis Gaya. Overall, in a duel of two struggling teams, the draw can arguably be seen as fair, but Valencia fans might be more angered because of the lost opportunity.
Valencia fans, though, at least some of them must be happy at taking some valuable points off Ronald Koeman.
As everyone knows by this point, the memories of Ronald Koeman's season in Valencia 12 years ago aren't exactly feel-good moments for the fans, who had to endure a big chunk of shameful performances and the danger of getting relegated with one of the best squads in this whole century. Remember, that was a team with David Villa, David Silva, Juan Mata, Joaquin, Vicente, Morientes, Albelda, Baraja, Albiol, so there's an obvious satisfaction after the way Valencia played this weekend against Barca. Even though Koeman's sour aftertaste hasn't really left that much of a mark, and most fans just try to ignore his few months in Valencia's dugout. But it seems Ronald Koeman himself doesn't forget that easily, as he once again generated quite a stir in the press conference before the game, talking about the new role of David Albelda and Santi Cañizares as TV pundits. Remember that back in 2014, David Albelda used his own Twitter account to wish that Ronald Koeman would sign for Barca because, quote, "that would balance the competition quite a bit," end quote. So far, the former Valencia legend hasn't been proven wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And what did you think about Koeman's tactics in this game? It seemed to me he made some strange decisions.
You know, Koeman is a strange manager overall. His reliance on the Dutch classic 4-3-3 is sometimes too restrictive on some of the players, funneling the attacking plays on the center as Messi's falsely placed on the right, even though in real life he enjoys an absolute freedom of movement. Antoine Griezmann's poor performance this season, I believe, is also related to some extent to not being properly placed in the pitch by the coach. It's true that the injuries just keep piling up, and the weakness of the defense can be blamed on having to play two youngsters as Ronald Araujo and Mingueza. But from the midfield onwards, the team just lacks originality, speed, and creativity to seriously harm the opposition. The comparison can be made to handball, for example. Barca moved the ball around Valencia's box too much and too slowly. So Javi Gracia's men just had to be disciplined, shut any potential openings, and see how Barca failed to generate anything positive.
Talk to me, Paco, about that Gaia Griezmann penalty incident. What did you make of that decision there?
I surely don't want to run away from the controversy, but in my view, the play is so dubious that at this point I can understand both points of view. Barca fans see a pen, Valencia fans see that Gaia didn't do anything wrong to bring down Antoine Griezmann inside the box. However, I have to say that the referee was right not sending Gaia off the pitch, because a red would have been incredibly unfair on the defender in such a fussy play. The drama actually for Valencia is that Jaume Domenech managed to save Messi's shot, but their defending was absolutely horrible, and the ball ended in an easy header for Barca's number 10 after narrowly avoiding being in offside position.
Yeah, a Messi goal that was his 643rd for Barcelona, matching Pelé's record for goals with one club that he set back in the day with Santos. Incredible stuff, that. Now, finally, Paco, just in general, why do you think it is that Valencia can play so well against teams like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, but then they can drop points against Eibar, Alaves, Elche, and almost get eliminated in the Copa del Rey by a Tercera Division side like Terrassa? Is it a motivational issue?
Definitely not a motivational issue. You know, the biggest drama for Valencia and their fans this season can be extrapolated from the 14 games played to date. The fixture against Barca was an excellent summary. Valencia are young. Valencia are an inexperienced lot, strapped from most of the quality players this summer, with zero signings to replace them, and with plenty of youth academy players such as Yunus Musa or Uroš Rašić trying to do a good job. Therefore, they are, you know, a coin toss of a team. They are capable of the best and capable of the worst. But their attitude is always spot on in every single game. They have heart, they have guts, they have the drive to improve, but they lack quality and experience. And that's why fans are so frustrated and should be even further with the management, with Meriton Holdings and with Peter Lim. With only a few signings, you know, here and there, or maybe having not sold all of the key players last summer, Valencia would be much higher in their standings instead of fighting for the life and flirting with the last spots of the table.
Yeah, Valencia still down near the bottom, but an impressive performance this weekend. Okay, thanks for that, Paco. So that was what happened between Barcelona and Valencia. Let's move right to the top of the table now with our sore throat game of the week. And here comes Alex Brotherton to bring us some of the best commentary clips from Atletico Madrid's 3-1 victory over Elche.
Atletico Madrid versus Elche provided a lively start to Saturday's La Liga action, with goals, controversy and talking points aplenty at the Wanda Metropolitano. Given the team's positions at opposite ends of the table, it was actually a closer contest than many would have expected. When Luis Suarez went down in the box less than 3 minutes in, it looked like it was going to be a long afternoon for Elche. Fortunately for them, VAR overturned the penalty call for a marginal offside, but just before half-time, the Uruguayan did get his goal. Suarez nipped in front of his man to add the deftest of touches to a teasing Kieran Trippier cross, a fitting way to mark his 200th La Liga appearance. The Cadena Cope commentator certainly enjoyed it, exclaiming, "Gol de líder," meaning goal for the league leaders.
Goal!
having ended a free game goalless run. Suarez went and added another after half-time, tapping home at the back post from another wonderful cross, this time provided by Yannick Carrasco. But Elche were far from out of it. They continued to press Atleti and got their just reward when Lucas Boye pulled one back through a well-worked corner routine.
Gol del Elche! Gol, 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 gol! Lucas Boye!
The Elche number 9 then almost completed an unlikely comeback, turning well and firing off a low volley, but Jan Oblak got down well at his near post. The moment of controversy came with 10 minutes to go, when Diego Costa, returning from injury as a sub, collapsed in the box after the slightest bit of contact from a high boot. To the bewilderment of the visiting side, as well as the La Liga TV commentators, Xavier Estrada pointed to the spot and Costa duly converted.
A flick on here from Correa, and down goes Diego Costa, and a penalty's been given. And look at the reaction of the Elche players, cannot believe that is the decision. It will be reviewed, of course, and well, it's exactly what I said a minute ago. Yeah. If Diego Costa was diving there, as the Elche players clearly believe, hopefully that will be picked up on now. Then the penalty standing, I can only assume because the referee and the VAR official had judged it was a high foot and therefore dangerous. But
my word,
Costa won that penalty, I think we can say, and now he's going to take it. Can he beat Edgar Badia? Yes, he can.
In the dying moments, Elche's legendary 40-year-old striker Nino went close to equalising and becoming the Liga's oldest ever goalscorer, but his header was well blocked. The 3-1 win strengthens Atleti's hold on top spot, particularly as Real Sociedad went on to drop points later in the day. Elche will feel aggrieved by the penalty decision, which came when they looked a good bet to equalise. They're now just a point above the relegation zone, although they do have a game in hand on most of their rivals.
Thanks, Alex. So yes, Atletico Madrid stay top of the table, but they're just taking it partido a partido, game by game. That's always been the mentality, and here's Kieran Trippier talking about exactly that after the match, and also about how he still thinks the first goal might be his.
No, Luis, soon has he arrived. You know, he's a big player. And for us, you know, any opportunity that he gets, he scores. But I think the first goal today, I think it was my goal. No, he say he touched, but no, he's fantastic. You know, throughout his career, he's a world-class striker. It's a long way now till end of the season, but we just want to go into every single game with the winning mentality, and we just take it game at a time.
That brings us then to the end of the first half of this Matchday 14 recap. There's still plenty more to come, of course, and we'll get into the rest of the round's action after this short break.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone and welcome back in to this episode of La Liga Lowdown. We've still got so much to cover, such as Real Madrid's win at Eibar, Getafe getting back to winning ways and so much more. But we'll start at the top of the table where Real Sociedad are no longer joint leaders. They fell to a 2-1 defeat at Levante to make it 8 matches now across all competitions without a win for La Real. I'll be honest though, this isn't that surprising. This is inevitable. I say it every time that Real Sociedad start to do well, just wait for the injuries. In each of the past 3 seasons, Real Sociedad have been in the top 3 for the most matches missed by players through injury. This year, they've already had 19 players who've been on the injury report, many of them for several weeks. For the next match, their midweek game against Atletico Madrid, they have 10 first team players who are either doubtful or already ruled out. I don't know what it is, but this is a squad that just habitually suffers injuries and it's hurting them again. Credit though to Levante for this win. It wasn't just because of Real Sociedad's injuries, of course. Levante were very good too, and they've really turned a corner in the last few weeks. Ruri Barlow wrote a piece on LaLigaLowdown.com last week on the interesting dynamics at Levante, and that's well worth checking out. There's a lot more content on our website too if you're looking for some Christmas lockdown reading material. Let's move on now to Real Madrid, who are joint top with Atletico Madrid on 29 points, even if they played 2 games more. They went away to Eibar this weekend and they were absolutely cruising after early goals from Karim Benzema and Luka Modric. They were nice goals, but an even better strike from Kiki Garcia pulled Eibar back into the tie. They really went for it in the second half and even had a handball penalty claim against Sergio Ramos. It wasn't given, and then Lucas Vazquez was able to add a late third to make it a 3-1 Real Madrid win. Let's bring in Hassan Karim, our Real Madrid man now. Now, be honest, Hass, after 15 minutes, what did you think the final score was going to be? Surely you didn't expect Real Madrid to be clinging on at the end.
Boy, oh boy, that was very stressful, wasn't it? Yeah, it was champagne football for those opening bits. Really actually thought they were just going to absolutely run away with it, given how they were playing. It was perfectly flowing. They were escaping Eibar's press with ease. Just everything was so, like, really well done and so clean. Like, they were just dancing out of pressure. It's like, it's probably the best football I've seen from Real so far this season. So given how that started and then how it progressed, yeah, I didn't expect them to be clinging on for dear life like they were at the end. That was really stressful to watch at times.
Stressful because it was a super Kiki Garcia goal to pull one back from Eibar. And 2 really nice goals from Real Madrid too. I mean, this was just a quality game, wasn't it?
Both teams were just really, really impressive throughout most of the game. I mean, Eibar, you know, and it's credit to Mendilibar, you know, a lot of people probably attacked him for thinking leaving that much space for Real Madrid is a very ballsy move. But it's something you have to respect. He's literally willing to die on that hill. He won't play the pragmatic sit back and wait for a chance to counter attack. He plays that wonderful football and is brave. So at the end of the day, yeah, this was a little advert for how good La Liga can be at its very best. Absolutely. This is exactly the best sort of level that we can expect from Spanish football. And, you know, for anyone who maybe doesn't watch it all that often, if I was to give them a game from the season to watch, this would definitely be up there for quality.
Completely agree with you there. Once again, Hass, Zidane hardly rotated. And it was the same stars of the past few weeks, Benzema, Modric, Lucas, who got the goals. What are your thoughts on Zidane's new attitude towards rotation, where he basically doesn't do it anymore?
Once again, Zidane keeping that mysterious aura about him. You just never know what's coming from that man. He either makes a hell of a load of rotations, or now this current trend seems to be making none at all. I mean, it doesn't look like the team is suffering from it too much. I mean, it's something I've been worried about consistently is, you know, the schedule and how packed it is. So, you know, when you're seeing especially the older stars like Benzema and Modric, you know, playing week in, week out, you do start to wonder how long is it before, you know, the wheels may or come off, you know, touch wood, they don't, of course. But it's interesting to see that. But I think a lot of that is down to the fact that, you know, a lot of the players that he probably wants to implement aren't quite fully firing yet. Fede Valverde's only just returned from injury. Martin Odegaard also has just returned from injury. Eden Hazard is training again, but again, only just returned from injury. So you don't want to throw those guys into games where there's a risk of reoccurrence. I mean, there was, I think, 11 fouls from Ibar in this game, so it definitely was a rugged affair alongside that. So maybe it's more of a precautionary tale than anything else. Who knows with Zidane, though? You never do know.
What we do know is it's 5 wins in a row now for Real Madrid. Do you think they can keep this momentum going like they did, remember, with the 10 post-lockdown wins in a row after the return in the summer?
This is Real Madrid through and through, especially under Zinedine Zidane, both in his first run as manager and in his second one as well. They're typically slow starters. They are very slow starters, and it's something we've commonly seen throughout seasons. Whereas as it gets to around the turn of the year, it seems they seem to pick up and really get their thing going. And I think that's what's going on now. We're starting to see Real Madrid click into gear and start to get going. And whether they can carry on this momentum, it all comes down to how fit the squad can remain. I think Real have had so far near enough as many injuries this season as they've scored goals, which is quite a mental stat in itself. So that gives you a rough picture of why it's been so spluttery up until this point. So I think now that Zidane's finally getting the pieces back together, we'll start to see some more consistency, at least I hope.
Okay, thanks, Haas. We're going to stick with Real Madrid for a moment now. Just like last week, we've got another listener question from one of our top fans. This week is Rovshan, and the question is, with everything he's achieved in his short managerial career, when will Zidane get the respect he deserves? Many people are pundits, call him just a man manager, but surely you need to have tactical ideas as well in order to win so many trophies. To answer this, we've got Roman de Arquer. He's a Barcelona fan, of course, but let's see if even he can give Zidane the respect he surely deserves. What do you think, Roman?
It is surprising that some people still doubt Zidane. I mean, all the titles he's won speak for themselves. You know, his curriculum is immaculate at Real Madrid. And he's not just won a few cups or by chance or anything like that. He's won 3 consecutive Champions Leagues. I mean, how many managers can say that? He's also won Spanish Leagues. He's won international trophies. I mean, it's amazing what he's done at Real Madrid so far. And it is surprising, honestly, that people still doubt him. To be honest, it is true that he said personally in a press conference that for him it's more important to manage the players than it is to focus on the tactics. But we know that football nowadays is really, really well worked, in the sense that everything is studied to the minimum detail, to the minimum aspect. So of course tactics have to come in. You can't just win with a bunch of quality players or a bunch of motivated guys. No, you need a lot more than that. So definitely Zidane does his job in his office and then makes sure the players implement all the ideas he provides, and he boosts all that tactical work by getting the most out of his players psychologically and physically. So that's why Real Madrid are always an extremely hungry club. No matter how much they win, they always have that mentality to get more and more and more. So Zidane definitely deserves credit. His job at the club has been fantastic, and it is still very surprising that people doubt his tactical and his managerial abilities.
Okay, thanks Roman, and thanks Rovshan for the question. Let's look through some of the weekend's other scores now. Villarreal kept up their top 4 hopes with a 3-1 win away at Osasuna on Saturday. They were massively helped by a 20th minute Aridane Hernandez red card, but to be honest, they'd been in the driving seat at that point anyway. Sevilla couldn't keep up as they were held to a 1-1 draw at home to Real Valladolid when they played on Saturday. It was Raul Carnero who got the late equaliser for Real Valladolid, and wow, what a goal that was. Seek that one out if you haven't seen it already. On Sunday, Celta Vigo got the action going with another victory, this time 2-0 over Alaves. Iago Aspas was the driving force and Brais Mendes was the finisher, scoring both the goals. It means that it's now 5 wins from 6 to start the Eduardo Cudet era at the club. Celta, yeah, they're looking scary once again. So too are Granada, who've overcome their mini slump in form. They won an Andalusian derby at home to Real Betis 2-0 with Roberto Soldado scoring both the goals in the first half, the first of them from the penalty spot. Then we also saw Getafe win 2-0 away at Cadiz, their first La Liga victory since beating Barcelona all the way back on October 17th. They did also win in the Copa del Rey midweek away at Anaitasuna, but I was at that game and I can tell you, Getafe were awful. But here, they were much better, as Cucho and Maksimovic fired them to victory. Now, we're going to finish this weekend's episode by discussing a team that we've not actually spoken about too much this season. They've been floating around in mid-table purgatory. They're the only team currently with a goal difference of exactly zero, so they might be the most average side in the division, but it's a special club. It's a historic club. It's a well-supported club. It's Athletic Club. So here's Athletic fan and journalist Beñat Gutierrez to talk about what's going on in Bilbao, where Athletic earned a fairly unconvincing 2-0 win over Huesca on Friday night. What did you make of that performance, Beñat? Not the result, but the performance.
The victory against Huesca on Friday was good news for Athletic, because after that defeat against Real Madrid, they are able to avoid trouble in the table. But from a performance point of view, it was again a very poor game for Athletic. Both goals came really late in the game against a struggling rival like Huesca. And it is true that Athletic improved in the second half, but still wasn't enough. Huesca was able to dismantle completely Athletic's offensive scheme just with putting a guy on Muniain, and that was the extent of offensive ideas for Athletic. And if you look at the result, in the end, it seems like everything was about luck, because Codro, a player who had a chance just because Villalibre got injured, was the guy who ended up changing the game completely. A player, let's remember, that barely comes for Garitano, who's been claiming that the squad lacks of strikers.
Yeah, they've really been lacking a reliable goal scorer. Right now, even after they've played 14 matches, they don't have a single player with more than two goals. How can they solve that? Do they need to sign someone in January?
It's true that Athletic is struggling to score goals this season, but I don't think there's any name in the market that can solve this situation. Fans, and even Garitano, have made an easy target of Athletic strikers, but this is a more complex issue. The main problem for Athletic right now is that they don't create goal chances. I read that since the game against Betis, the team spent a total of 3 hours without shooting on target in San Mamés. That's the season in a nutshell for Athletic. So if Garitano wants goals, he needs to take more risk and needs to trust players like Villalibre, who have the potential to score regularly. If not, get ready for more headlines with the name Llorente on them.
Yeah, Llorente, I think, will just be permanently linked with a return. So overall, it's been a very mixed season for Athletic Club. They've not been able to win two matches in a row. You touched on some of the issues there, but just what's the main problem with this team?
Athletic has many problems this year, including a blatant lack of ambition that starts in the bench. There were several moments during the season when Athletic seemed just happy enough with a draw. With that attitude and with the problems Athletic has to score, you're not gonna win many games. Some weeks ago, Garitano made highly controversial statements when he said that the team didn't have the potential to win two games on a row. And this obviously really outraged Athletic supporters. But it's not that the whole season has been a disaster. There have been games, or halves at least, when Athletic has improved, when they were playing two strikers, when they were playing more creative midfielders, and with those solutions, the team looked better. But after that, almost in a case of self-boycott, Garitano kept going over and over again to his A plan that is not working this year.
It's been 2 years now since Garitano took over. I mean, he managed to save the club from potential relegation that first year, and he's led them to a Copa del Rey final, but what's the current view of Garitano in Bilbao?
For a lot of supporters, Garitano is a dead man walking, and it's all about when he's gonna be fired. I've even seen supporters who were hoping for a defeat so the Garitano era would come to an end. He saved two match balls, two ultimatums against Betis and Huesca, and he seems to have Bear Grylls level survival skills. The team improves just enough to keep him on the bench, but nothing else. People still thankful for what he did when he saved the season for the club, and also for reaching the Copa del Rey final. But even then, there were voices raising concerns about his suitability for Athletic's project. Now, I feel that the relationship with the supporters has reached the point of no return. It's hard to imagine scenarios where Garitano can regain the confidence of the supporters.
Lastly, what's your view on the Supercoppa? It's a little strange that it'll take place before the Copa del Rey final, but this is a chance for Athletic to compete for a rare trophy, and it's a chance to, I don't know, to just get excited about something in what has been a fairly dull season overall for the club. Are the fans of Bilbao excited about the Supercoppa?
I don't hear a lot of conversations about Supercopa these days, actually. Supporters are very concerned about how the team is playing in La Liga, about whether young players are getting chances or not, and about next weekend's members' assembly, where the board needs to get the budget approved. I'm pretty sure that there are still some supporters who don't know when the Supercopa is. But that said, I'm sure everybody will be excited for the tournament with those memories of that glorious victory in the Supercopa against Barcelona. And it's also quite a bizarre situation for Athletic, because the performance in the season is pretty poor, but they are 3 games away of winning 2 titles. I guess that's why we love football.
Absolutely, Benyat, that's why we love this game. And well, there's plenty more football for us to enjoy in this coming midweek. On Tuesday night and Wednesday night, we have a full round of La Liga games, and of course we'll have a matchday recap podcast for you after that. It'll be coming out on Thursday morning, a nice little Christmas Eve treat for everyone. For now, my thanks to everyone who contributed to this episode. That's Paco Pollitt, Alex Brotherton, Hassan Karim, Roman de Arquer, and Benyat Gutierrez. I've been your host, Yumit Tier. We'll be back in just a few days. For now, thanks a lot for listening to this one.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.